Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men or bisexual men, or men who call themselves bisexual, or actually asexual or metrosexual, you know, whatever sexual it is except for heterosexual. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world, and who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So tonight, unfortunately, Misty's feeling under the weather. I told her to take the evening and really try to feel better. And we send our love and healing all to you, Misty, and hope things are going better soon. But I do have a very special guest on tonight that we told people would be joining us. Ms. Suzette Hinton is doing a return performance. Suzette, how are you?
Doing great, Bonnie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, because whenever you come on, you are such an inspiring, you know, story for people. And if anybody would have any questions for Suzette, if you're listening live, because most of our people listen after the fact, but if you're one of our live listeners and you would like to call in, I'm going to give you the call-in number. So please get your pencil ready. And it's area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And feel free to call and ask any questions you might have. So, Suzette, I'm so excited to have you back on the show. It's been a little while now.
It has. I am so tickled to be on the show again.
Yes, and, you know, when you were here last time, I had so many wonderful comments from people, how you really inspired them through your story and through your honesty and giving them hope. Most importantly, you know, they really felt like they finally had hope. And, you know, a lot of times when people go through this situation, you know, I just came, in fact, from our support chat, and people always say, is there any hope? Can I ever find a successful relationship again? Will I ever be able to trust myself? Will I ever be able to love again? And quite frankly, if anybody was asking herself if she'll ever be able to trust again, I bet it was you. Am I right?
So true. So very true. I didn't trust myself. I remember many times praying and saying, God, I don't trust. First, I was like, God, I don't trust you because you allowed this to happen. And then after a while, it was like, no, you know what, let's go deeper. I don't trust myself. I don't trust myself to know what's the difference between healthy and unhealthy. I don't trust myself to really believe that what I hear my value is what I really believe it to be. I don't trust myself. And I've been there. I know what that feels like.
And before we start talking to you about why you didn't trust yourself, which is very explainable after people know your story, let's talk a little bit about your story. Because you do come from a religious background, correct?
Most definitely.
And you grew up in the South?
Yes, South Pentecostal holiness background.
And that's about as religious as you can get, correct?
Very much so, at least in my book.
Yes, very religious. And also, you are a minority woman.
Yes, I am. I'm an African-American woman.
Mm-hmm. And quite a beautiful one, I will add. As people can see when they go to your website at SuzetteHinton.com, like I do. But you see all your beautiful pictures. And plus, if they're listening to this broadcast, your pictures are on there anyway, so they can see firsthand. But the thing is that when you got married, in the environment that you were in a small town, right?
Yes, yes. Kinston was considered a small town at the time.
And in the South, and part of a very religious type of church. What age did you get married at, Suzette?
I actually got married pretty late for most people.
Mm-hmm.
I got married at 29.
Okay, but you still, because of your upbringing and, you know, the church, you still didn't have a lot of experience behind you, would you say?
I was very naive. I think my parents wanted to protect us. Well, I don't even have to say I think it. I know they did, because I think having three daughters, their biggest fear was that we were going to end up getting pregnant. That fear just ended up translating into a lot of isolation. And we didn't learn to trust ourselves. We didn't learn how to trust people. We didn't know the difference between love and what wasn't love. And we knew it was church. All we knew was church. And I appreciate the reverence for God that I gained at that time. But it was more of a fear of him, a fear that I couldn't please him, as opposed to a fear that's in awe or reverence of him. And
so were you active in your church?
Very much so. As a matter of fact, I played the piano, actually, for my first choir when I was 10 years old. And, of course, I think I shared it last time. I think my sister, my younger sister, and I were the only two children at prayer meeting on Friday night. So my parents took us to church religiously. We were in the YPHA. We were in everything. And I think they felt like by giving us that it would help us to avoid a lot of things. And I did. I avoided a lot of pitfalls, and I am very grateful that I avoided a lot of things because I was too afraid to try them. So I'm grateful that I
were you dating much at that point?
Dating was not was totally unheard of. We did not date. The gentleman came calling.
Okay.
And as I said before, I think you would sit in the living room and my mom and my dad would kind of waltz through kind of nonchalantly, but I knew what that meant. And if I was sitting too close to him, my dad would clear his throat, and I knew, oh, girl, you better get to the other end of that sofa.
So that wasn't even like an optional thought, right?
No.
You knew you had to wait till your wedding day before anything was going to be happening.
True, and it, my parents had difficulty with displays of affection. I could not rejoice in being happy over a boyfriend. It was really misconstrued as being too serious, too fast. If on the phone with them, it was too long. You know, if I acted happy about him, she had difficulty. I'll never forget one boyfriend I invited to church, because we were going to get him saved, of course. And we were sitting in the back of the church, and I was holding his hand. And my mom noticed me holding his hand, and she was in the choir stand, and she was, like, releasing her hands with a very awful look on her face, like, let go of his hand. Why are you showing affection? She said, I don't know why you had to hold his hand in church. Why did you have to hold his hand? You know, so she was very, she had a lot of difficulty with displaying affection toward men. I don't think she trusted men herself. And I had to keep that joy to myself. And then my younger sister and I, when we became adolescents, then she became my confidant, and we would sneak in the room and talk about boys and stuff like that. And she was my only outlet to really rejoice in a new found romance.
So that was when you were teenagers, right?
Yes. Yes.
But I guess you were still feeling hesitant. I guess you were pretty inexperienced and pretty unknowledgeable about the realities of what it was all about, correct?
Very. You know, I would be, you know, I would try to, I always kind of colored outside the lines. I got in trouble for it. And, of course, some lines I didn't cross because, I mean, the fear of God, my mama, my daddy, and the neighborhood was, you know, blocking that. You know, I like to kiss and hug and things that I saw on soap operas and on Walt Disney. I would kind of recruit or try it out. And, of course, my boyfriends were very happy to oblige. They were very happy to oblige. But it didn't go, you know, nothing went underneath the clothes, you know, no fondling like that. It was always, it was a lot of kissing and stuff like that, but we never ventured to go beyond that. Never
and that
did.
Was because of the upbringing from the church, correct?
A lot of it was because of the upbringing of the church. And then because I had I had this kind of Cinderella idea.
Mm-hmm.
The soap operas didn't show you that.
Mm-hmm.
And all you did was see them kiss. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I knew.
So how did you come to meet your husband, your gay husband?
We actually had a mutual friend who started a church, and I was very close to that friend, and my ex was a member of the church, very active, a minister, and I say that in quotes. And it's interesting because I really was not attracted to him, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
He was not somebody. He kind of came across to me, you know, he just kind of seemed like a church guy. You know, big Bible, tambourine, you know, Jerry Curl back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And it just seemed like he just wasn't my type. And but what ended up happening is my heart got broken by the person that I felt like was my type. And
uh-huh.
he listened and he paid attention and he said the things that I needed him to say, that I was valuable and that person was a fool. Just those
uh-huh.
kind of things I needed that person to say. And before him, to be completely honest with you, because I went to an all-white school during desegregation, I was very comfortable around white men.
Uh-huh.
I was very intimidated by black men at that time in my life because there was an energy. Now, of course, now I love it. I love
uh-huh.
that energy that black men have, but when they like you, when they love you, there's an energy. They're not politically correct with it. There's an energy to it that I found intimidating when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
But he's the first black man that seemed to, I could have comfort with, and we could talk and laugh, and he seemed really interested in me, and he wasn't like stalking me, of course, because I didn't have a very healthy view of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I was budding, I was scared of it at the same time. And I felt comfortable around him. And we kissed and stuff like that, but I didn't feel like I was a trophy. I didn't feel like I was being objectified.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I was stalked. And so I was very comfortable, and he listened.
Mm-hmm.
He listened. And at that time, I really felt like I needed somebody to listen to me and to approve of me.
And did you think he was just being very respectful of you because he wasn't making advances?
No, I didn't. Let me backtrack. I think a part of me did, because at that time in my life, it was more important to me to finally meet somebody that I could actually talk to without feeling weird or intimidated or strange.
And I think that's reasonable. And, you know, he made you feel good about yourself, right?
Initially.
Uh-huh.
Initially he did. But then as things became more romantic, and, of course, I like kissing, I liked affection, and after a while he started acting very uncomfortable with it. He would tell me, of course, that I was beautiful, that I was all these things, but then,
uh-huh.
of course, he was a real woman that I'm considering marrying, and I respect you too much to be pawing all over you. You know, you're going to be the mother of my children.
And how did you feel when he said that to you?
I started feeling shamed.
Uh-huh.
I started feeling there was something wrong with me, and a woman who would be more experienced in that situation would have been like, something's up with this cat. You know, but because I was inexperienced, and because also of my religious background, where really, in all honesty, most sermons made you feel vilified for being a woman, for being feminine, for being attractive. You got, you know, you were referred to as Jezebel or Delilah. You were the temptress. And so with that kind of background, when he shamed me in that way, instead of it making me press in and say, wait a minute, something's up with him, I ran to the altar and started praying, asking God to please help me to stop being so worldly. Stop, please help me to stop. This man wants to love me. This man sees me as more than a sexual object. And here I am. I'm so messed up I can't even accept it. I can't even accept it as it is.
I don't know if this is going to make you feel any better, but a lot of women will tell you that they were more worldly than you were, but when it came to being with a religious man, then they felt exactly the way that you felt. Even women who have been married before, when they meet up with these guys who use the religion as an excuse not to have to be intimate with you, and they talk about it being, it's not the right thing to do, and you start thinking about Jezebel and being a temptress, and they think they've changed their ways by going along with these gay men who are pretending to be straight. So don't feel funny that, it was just you. There's plenty of other women who tell me this story who had experience.
Wow. And that is so harmful. It's so harmful because I do believe that a lot of younger women, when they experiment with sex, are not ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have poor self-esteem and you're looking for sex to make you feel better about yourself, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be what actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
Though I understand the responsibility that goes with being that intimate with somebody,
mm-hmm.
It's got investment in what we teach our girls about themselves. There's got to be a balance because sex is good. It's a beautiful thing. And your sexuality is a beautiful thing. And your femininity is a beautiful thing. And no one should ever make you feel bad about that.
I'm sorry.
No one should ever shame you into not doing it before you're ready. So there's got to be a way to teach our daughters, because I realize this is more than just a gay straight thing. As you were saying, there are women who are experienced, but they weren't prepared for some of the things that men have told them and used spirituality and used the Bible to make them feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think many men who are hiding in the church, this is the strategy that they use.
Mm-hmm.
To make you feel that you're not the normal one, that they're the normal ones.
I found it to be true even beyond the gay, beyond a gay orientation.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of predators.
Yeah, to hide their own lust, to hide their own intentions. It's like
mm-hmm.
they stalk because they kind of, how an animal stalks the prey and the lion lays down and just kind of watches, pins his prey. And I think church staff do that very thing. I think they do that very thing. And then when the woman ends up having sex with them, then they make her feel bad and say, you tempted me. Or they'll say, you know what, I'm going to have to stop seeing you because my relationship with God is stronger than this, and I can't be with a woman that I'm gonna disappoint God.
Now, have you heard men say that in the church?
I've heard them say that. I've heard them say that. Well, I've heard my sisters who have come to me crying because they got pimped by a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
They got mishandled by the person who was supposed to be watching for their soul.
Mm-hmm.
They got mishandled by the deacon. They got mishandled by the trustee. They got mishandled by the man that could quote the scriptures or the man that seemed, quote, unquote, so anointed and so gifted and so godly. And then that person ends up sleeping with them or going too far with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn and do that same player thing that worldly men do after they've gotten what they set out to get.
Terrible.
And they leave you abandoned and feeling robbed and almost feeling raped. feeling cheapened.
Mm-hmm.
You turn on yourself and you say it's your fault, when the truth of the matter was you were preyed on by somebody who would not tell themselves the truth and used you. And it doesn't matter the geography. A predator is a predator, whether they're in church or in the street. A predator is a predator. And we
exactly.
have to learn to recognize that. And it goes much deeper and much further beyond the gay thing. Because I used to say, well, I came to a place of saying, the issue was not that my husband was gay. The issue was my husband's character.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Because
absolutely.
He lied.
Mm-hmm.
He was deceitful. He lied, and he was an opportunist. And it just so happened he had a gay orientation. But
mm-hmm.
what really ended the marriage was the deceit. The deceit that covered so many things, that was reflected in so many things that he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ended it. And so I came to that place of peace. Sure, you can't really have a marriage with somebody who doesn't want to be a husband to you or a wife to you. It just doesn't work. So sure.
Well, I think that's a really very good point. And, you know, I always tell women that if you don't fix yourself after these marriages, I mean, I was just saying it a few minutes ago in our chat room, you know, even if you don't start out broken, by the time you're done in these relationships, you are broken.
Oh,
and
my
if you,
God.
Right?
So broke. You don't know
and if you don't
you
fix
are.
Yourself up, you're going to end up back in the same place just with somebody else.
And you know what? And it doesn't matter whether you get a new hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter whether you get another degree. It doesn't matter what you attain in life. You can be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, Fortune 1000, Fortune 5000. It does not matter.
Uh-huh.
Your brokenness will always show up in your relationship. I don't care what we do to compensate for it. I don't care what we do to try to make ourselves look better to ourselves.
Uh-huh.
We can get longer hair, shorter hair. We can lose weight. We can do all these things to try to make ourselves worthy. But until we dare to go into that dark room and grieve the loss and grieve how what was taken from us and grieve the fact that before he could betray us, we betrayed ourselves, and we got to find out why.
Uh-huh.
Why? Who am I? I got to know my value. I've got, and but I cannot ever find it until I'm willing to go back and embrace that broken woman or that broken little girl or whatever
uh-huh.
that wounded place is inside. You have to venture. You have to go there. And you might not can go by yourself. So that's when you need to get a therapist or a coach or somebody who can go the distance with you.
And I think wouldn't you say that a lot of times it's really scary to do that?
It is scary. That's why sometimes you got to take somebody with you. Because I'm very spiritual, and I prayed about this for years.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed about this, but God used people to restore me, one of those people being you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad I was able to do that.
Indeed, because I believe praying and opening yourself up, I believe God brings people. He uses people. And we have to be open because I'm telling you, he used some very unorthodox ways to heal me that my church would have never believed. There's some things that he's done for me and roads he's taken me down that I have to be careful who I share it with, not because I'm afraid of what it's going to do to me, because I'm secure in that, but because
uh-huh.
they wouldn't be able to receive it right now. They wouldn't be able to comprehend that the God they serve would allow or would even take me down that kind of road, because it's so different from the biblical teachings that they've had. So different in the way they have been programmed to perceive him or perceive her. You know?
Well, you know, not to bring up a sore spot, but because this is the greatest learning lesson of all that you teach people. After your marriage was over,
mm-hmm.
you went back for a second round, correct?
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and
indeed.
And I think and that women feel so weak when they have to tell me this, but I would appreciate you telling them that this is not something that's so unnatural to happen.
It's not. It's not. I'm telling you. Yep, I went back. And I'll tell you why, at least to the degree that I believe I've been illuminated, because
mm-hmm.
I may about 5 years late, you know, in the future, there'll be a deeper illumination.
Mm-hmm.
But where I am now, I believe part of, and this is going to sound very weird, but I believe part of the reason I went back was because of unforgiveness. And it's weird because in one sense, I hadn't forgiven him, and I felt like he owed me and his son.
Uh-huh.
When he said he had prayed and he told God, "Lord, if you give me another chance with her, she was
mm-hmm.
the best thing that happened to me," and I knew how my son missed his father, and it wasn't so much I was crazy about him or in love with him, but I felt like if he wanted to pay that debt, I owed it to myself and my son to give him a chance because of what he put us through.
And you also believe that people could change, right?
Indeed, I did. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that people could change. I believe that, and it was that and the unforgiveness, and I had not really moved much further from where I was when we broke up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go as deep the first time as I did the second time. When
mm-hmm.
you and I met, I was determined I was going to leave no stone unturned because I was not going to come back into this again. And also, I didn't want to just change partners, if it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Where different pants look different, but it's the same thing. And it wasn't just that the person orientation. It was the fact that I was a magnet for unavailable men.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
That was the deep thing. And I was determined. I said, I need to know about this. I went online. I went to different websites, yours being one, because I was determined I'm not going to be ignorant. I'm going to find out about homosexuality and about gay and what it means, and that it's more than just sex. It's deeper than sex. Sex may be the way that it's expressed, but it's an orientation. It's something you can't turn on and off.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that a good woman can cure.
Right, because people are just born differently. I keep trying to explain that. It's nothing you can... You didn't cause it, and you can't change it.
Can't change it. And it's
right?
funny because when I've talked to members, friends of his family, a friend of his family said, we were surprised when he said he was going to marry you. We were like, oh, he likes women? I think they were so relieved and so happy thinking that he had finally found that good woman that was going to cure him, that they didn't tell me what they already knew. To find out later, they knew.
Mm-hmm.
They thought I was going to be the silver bullet.
But isn't it possible, because I always say this, you know, I think we blame ourselves a lot for something that's just really not within our control to understand. I mean, to be honest with you, I think many of us, even if we knew that they had had an experience in the past, when it came to the present or the future and they told us that it's no longer the way it is,
yeah,
we would believe it. I mean, I thought that, you know, I had a boyfriend before my ex-husband, my gay ex-husband, who was gay. And this is going back to the 1970s, and that was in the years of sexual revolution, and
yeah,
it was like anything goes, and they had that funny Kinsey report that people would like to use as a scale, you know, 1 to 6. So they would say,
yeah,
you know, it's primarily heterosexual, and you maybe had a couple of encounters. Well, it didn't mean anything. You're heterosexual.
Right.
You know, they
right.
gave people like false impressions, and this guy I went with, you know, in high school, and then I met up with him again 7 years later. And what happened, he told me that he had had 2 relationships with men and 2 long-term relationships with women. And he realized after the men that that's not who he is. And guess what? That sounded logical to me.
Yeah.
You know, I thought people have the ability to pick and choose when it comes to sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know back then that there was no choice. And I don't think they themselves know it. I think that emotionally they want that straight life.
Yeah.
And even if they don't want the sexual, and they think to themselves, how much time does sex have to take up anyway? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, once a week. You know, I'll fake it till I make it.
20 minutes if it's really good.
If it's really good. So that's what I'm saying, but most guys feel they can get away with it in 5 or 10 minutes. And so they feel like if their need for it is strong enough to want to have all the other, you know, things at the end, pot of gold at the end of rainbow, you know, then they'll have to just do this once in a while. And
yeah,
if they love their wives enough, they'll be able to do it. And maybe it's not exactly what they want, but, you know, it's only sex. You know, sex is sex. And I think
right.
they really go in with that attitude. I want to be married. I want to have a wife. I want to have children. I want to do the right thing. I want people to care about me and love me. I want to be a great guy to everybody. I don't want anybody to be disappointed in me. And I do love this woman. You know, I really do believe in their hearts they love as best as they can, which,
yeah,
you know, they're not trying to trick us or trap us. They really want to try to make a go of this. But they find within a short amount of time or a longer amount of time they can't do it because this is not who they are.
And the thing about it, too, is they are naive, but they also, what they're believing about themselves is the picture is not complete yet. There are some people that know, and they're predators. Then there are other people that might have a piece over here that's kind of winking and a piece kind of shaking over there,
mm-hmm,
but it hasn't really come together.
Exactly.
For some of them, it doesn't come together until they're in a marriage. Because the one thing about being in a marriage or being in a relationship with somebody, whether you're living with them or whatever, is you can't escape it then. You're with that person 24/7.
Exactly.
And if you're not, you know, it's almost like you can kind of, maybe you can have sex with them the random times that you might have had it when you were just dating.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting each other, maybe in the excitement for them of having maybe a woman who seems to get them. You know, whatever that thing is that makes you tell yourself, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe it's okay. But then when you are in that relationship with that person where you're seeing them more and more and you're around them more and more, and now it's not just a thing that you do, now it's expected. Now I got to. Now
it's very true. And, you know, it's almost as if when you meet these guys, they're hoping against hope, you know, especially these religious guys like the one you married, where, you know, you had minimal experience or knowledge of experience. I mean, you were pretty naive at that point, as many women are. And why shouldn't you believe what he's telling you? He knows he has the upper hand in that, right?
Right, because, I mean, he knows himself. You know, it's almost like what Maya Angelou says, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. I didn't know anything else but words. I didn't know how to read body language. I knew my intuition sometimes was going, what was that? Oh, that's odd. Oh, that's weird. But I didn't have enough, I didn't have anything else to go on.
Exactly.
And I wasn't taught to honor that intuition. I wasn't taught that. So I just kind of dismissed it because I didn't have any evidence.
Now, was he ever married before?
I didn't know how to recognize it.
Was he married before at all?
Mm-mm. No. He had girlfriends before.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I didn't really talk a lot to his girlfriends, but there was one in particular, and she didn't say anything bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't say they broke up because of any particular thing, but, of course, she was also a person in the church.
Well, I was going to say they probably never even got to the point of sex.
I cannot imagine they did.
Right, so she probably wouldn't have any idea.
Yeah.
She may have known something wasn't quite right, but I don't think, you know, without having been married, she could probably buy that same excuse also.
Yeah.
This is not for, you know, we have to be married to do this kind of thing, right?
Right. Right. And I guess the thing about it, you know, you say, okay, when people tell you that, of course you believe that they can change and you believe that, you know, anybody can change. And that's true. Anybody can change. And I still believe that. But I don't, but the thing about it is I don't have the market on what that change should be for a person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the change for some people is to come out of the closet and stand in the light. Be authentic. Be real. Own your stuff. Be responsible. Tell the truth. Tell yourself the truth.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that is the change. And I even now, he and I are still in a lot of ways estranged. But it's not because of him being gay. And it's not because he won't admit it. The reason of the estrangement is because his character isn't different. And so I wouldn't be best buddies with a person of that character anyway. I wouldn't expose my back to a person of that character anyway. I would not want to have friendship with a person of that character anyway. It's nothing against him from a lack of forgiveness or homophobic or it's nothing like that. The reason why he's not in my circle has nothing to do with him being gay. Because I have people in my circle that are gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the utmost integrity.
Right. I think that's really important that women have to understand that. It's amazing how almost all of our women who I've worked with throughout the years, tens of thousands of them, either had gay friends or they were very accepting of gay. Very, very tiny minority were not. I would say maybe 1% to 2%. The overwhelming majority of women feel very positive about gay people, and that's part of the way they know how to target us, because they know if anything does happen, we're not going to go to slash their throats because we're kind and understanding and compassionate women. So
yeah.
It's no mistake that they find us. So no doubt you had gay friends and even have gay friends. It has nothing to do with gay. It has to do with the lies, right, and the deceit.
Yeah. It has to do with the lack of integrity or immaturity, you know, because sometimes people's lack of integrity is because of immaturity.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times it's that because that's what's in them and it's serving them and they don't want to have integrity because their lack of it is giving them what their ego wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest lesson for me, because my thing was, whether a person was gay, straight, whatever, it never was that big of an issue for me. I always was a person that looked at a person's character as being more important than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to judge character when it came to that. I didn't know how. I really didn't know how. And now I feel like I'm better in that. I feel like I'm better because I believe part of what lets me know that I'm at least moving in the right direction is the way, it's like the change that's happening inside.
Mm-hmm.
Things around you. Your world changes. The people you're with changes. And the people that are close to me now are very, very different, and they're becoming more and more a reflection of the healing that's taken place inside of me. And there, and in that circle are some people who are gay, and that have
uh-huh.
me about it in ways they haven't been able to be with other people.
Uh-huh.
And that's the grace, Bonnie. That's the grace. Because
are
I
you
could,
still actively involved in your church, or are you a part of another church now?
Well, actually, I wasn't until about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the church that I was in before, but I play the piano. I'm a musician, and I lead praise and worship and all that. And for a long time, I had not been really active in a church. If I played, it was for the money. I'll just be frank. If I played, it was for the money. And in my launching my businesses, I was looking for a church to play for as a money-making venture, not denying my giftedness because, I mean, when you get me, you get that. But
mm-hmm.
my main goal was the money. And I just happened to stumble upon a church that I wasn't really even looking to be inspired. I wasn't looking for it. But I was inspired. I sat because I started going and sitting in the church just as a person before I would agree to provide music on an online
uh-huh.
basis. And I just happened to go, and I just happened to sit. And there was something unique about this church for me. I felt inspired. I felt inspired to actually play. It wasn't because of the money or was it to help out. I actually just felt inspired. Now, of course, I worked out something with the pastor because, of course, getting paid, that's what I'm used to, and that's what I wanted. But it went beyond my motives for going. And I agreed to something that I didn't think I would ever do, and that would be to play at one place every Sunday. It's like, okay, I can give you 2 Sundays, but the other two, I have a date with Oprah because I'm really into Super Soul Sunday. So it's like, you know, but I was so inspired by this church that I agreed to be their musical director and to play every Sunday. And this was my third Sunday playing today. And every time I play, I feel inspired.
Isn't that wonderful?
So it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. And so I'm just enjoying it. I'm learning the older I get is to be in the moment.
And I agree with that, Suzette. You have to appreciate every moment you have. And
yes, I'm worried about what it means. I'm just being in
just
the
moment. Just to sidetrack for a minute, you know, since you last been here with us, you did mention that you had met somebody who was wonderful, right?
Yes, he is. Can you tell I'm smiling when I say yes, he is?
Yes, I can. You've been with him for a while already, right?
Indeed. And this is big for me.
Mm-hmm. How long has it been now?
Oh, my God. We started dating in January.
Right, that's what I thought, in the winter time.
Yeah, so this coming January will be 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I ask God to bless me with somebody that just being with them would make me fall in love with them over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Just the strength of who they are. And I tell you, I'm just as giddy about him now, if not more so, than I was in the beginning. And I am in such awe, and I feel so humbled and so grateful for that. So
and
grateful.
That's a true sign of a man who's a good man. You know, when you have such high standards and you find someone who can meet those needs, that really says a lot for him, doesn't it?
And do it without any struggle. He doesn't make me feel that anything that I ask of him that I need in order to be in the relationship, he never makes me feel like it's too much to ask.
And, you know, I just want to bring up one thing. I had this conversation today earlier with my sister, and she was saying to me that a friend of hers slept over, and they lost her keys, you know, for her car. So
mm-hmm.
She said, it's really interesting how she called her husband, and he said, no problem, honey, you know, I'll meet you halfway. You know, my sister could drive this one, and, you know, I'll give you the keys, and, you know, if you want me to just come there, I'll give you the keys. And my sister said, if she had ever done that, and I thought about, like, if I had ever done that, you know, these husbands would be screaming and yelling, what are you, stupid? You're going to make me make a whole trip there. And, you know, we said that's the difference between having a man who's really a wonderful man and one who's not. And that has nothing to do with sexuality. I mean, that's just how a man, you know, is a decent man and cares enough about you that he puts your needs first for a change, right?
Yes, I feel honored by him. I feel like
mm-hmm.
he honors me. He honors my femininity. He honors me as me and thinks it's great. And I've only known a semblance of this at only one other time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But at this age and stage, oh my God, that's gold to me. That's like giving
mm-hmm.
me $1 million.
And I tell women, if you want this to happen in your life, it can happen. You know, they get so discouraged. You know, when you're in the midst of all this, you don't trust any man. You think they're all the same. You think they're out to get you. You know, they're going to trick you again. And, I mean, I understand that in the early months, you know, you're so hurt and you're so broken that it's hard to even think on any kind of level. But after you repair yourself and heal yourself, then you're able to, you know, be a little more objective about what's out there. And I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not. But there are good men out there, wouldn't you say so, besides yours and mine?
Oh, indeed. And we have to require more of ourselves. It's one
mm-hmm.
thing to do the work. And that's that when you said, you know, you healed yourself, done these things, you got to do the work. But it doesn't stop there. A vital part of not just healing the wound, but becoming whole, is you have to open yourself back up. You have to take the training that you've had and what you've learned about yourself and what you've learned about life and about people and all the work you've done. You've got to take this back on the road. You've got to get back on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
The horse that threw you. Now that you've learned how to pat his face and feed him an apple and all that, now you got to pat him and get back on him.
You know, I'd like to ask you something, Suzette, because now you've gone into coaching.
Oh,
and
yes.
That's a big responsibility to take on being a coach. And I'm sure nobody does it better than you do, because you're so supportive to women and you've lived this yourself, so you know how to guide them. But maybe you can give us just a couple of hints. If you're working with women, what would you tell them as far as getting started in healing?
The first thing that I would tell them is take a break. Because a lot of times we women, because we feel so damaged, we rush headlong into another relationship
uh-huh.
with another man. And it's very tempting to do it, very tempting, especially if it's somebody that gives you whatever your brand of validation is.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to take a break. You got to take a break, and you got to give yourself permission to go inside your own soul and tell yourself the truth that you don't want to hear because you think it makes you feel like a fool or that you were had or whatever that thing is, whatever that wound is. You got to take a station break, and you got to go and heal that part before you get involved with somebody else. I don't care what they tell you, because if you have a hemorrhage and you're bleeding and you're in the water, you will attract sharks.
That's so true. That's a beautiful way to put it.
You will, and sometimes your girlfriends or your same-sex friends can make you feel like if this new guy's going to be the exception. But if your history has proven to you that generally it's not going to be an exception, you got to tell yourself the truth and say, you know what, I love my girlfriend or I love my male friend, but I've got to sit down and get real with myself. I've got to go there. And that would be the first thing I tell them. Maybe you need to take a with you. Maybe you need to take a therapist with you. But go there. Uncensored. Don't censor yourself. Don't say whether it's good or bad, right or wrong. Just say it.
I think that's wonderful advice.
Yes. Yes.
And what would be the next step you would tell them?
And I would tell them to definitely, and to me that is an opening spiritually. To me that is spiritual. And once you do that, I think your inner voice, your inner guide, will give you the next step. Once you open up and you tell that truth, and whatever your worship is, whether it's God or whatever that portal of spirituality is, confess it. Tell the truth. Just give yourself permission. Just tell the truth. And you might can't tell your girlfriends, you might can't tell your mama, you might can't tell your pastor, you might can't tell whoever. But give yourself a chance to tell the truth without any criticism. And do it over and over and over again. And by doing so, the next steps will come. They will. Because a coach told me, you are petitioning your cosmic waiter. When you tell the truth, you open yourself up for truth to come to you. And the truth will guide you. But you got to first tell the truth. And if it's too painful for you to tell it by yourself, go to somebody, whether it's a therapist or a coach. I tell people, the money I spend on my coach, yes, this coach has a coach, is the best money I could ever spend because it's an investment in me. Invest, let them, whatever that is, invest in yourself. I don't care what the cost is. My God, use your weave money. Use your mani-pedi money. You know, invest in yourself. That's the first step, Bonnie. We have
and
to tell our...
That's such good advice. Really.
We have to. And we don't have to walk at it alone because the right person is not going to shame you. The right person is not going to shame you. And sometimes that is the greatest healing, is to be with somebody that says, you know what, I don't care what it is you just told me, I still see that you're right. I still see that you're valuable. And all is not lost. That person did not take everything from you. And don't give them permission. Don't give your soul away. Don't give your soul. Don't leave your soul with that person that hurt you. Because if you do, they've won. Fight for you.
These,
for you.
Have you met other women in church where this happened?
Not that many who will be honest about it.
Right.
And that's sad, because I think a lot of people are still in the closet. Because shame and appearances. The church is supposed to be a place of freedom and authenticity and getting in touch with your spiritual core, but for some people, it's the place of the most phoniness. They can't be honest. They can't be real. They'd be stoned.
Uh-huh.
They'd be victimized all over again. And so I think sometimes in some churches, that's where most souls are imprisoned. And I know it sounds like an oxymoron.
Uh-huh.
But it's true.
And I agree. I just think it's so incredible that so many women for so long have had to suffer because of religious upbringing, not understanding what the truth is, buying into the lies. And I just, can't imagine living day in and day out having to feel so terrible about yourself because you can do nothing right to make your man happy.
That's an awful place to be.
Do you feel that's where you were at?
Yes, I felt like when the light bulb came on for me, the aha moment was, no matter how better of a woman I ever become, he'll never want me because he doesn't want a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter, even if you say, okay, Sue, that this is wrong with you, you got a bad temper, you got this, you got the other, all those things that they tell you to get the light from off of them to make you kind of limp away feeling bad about yourself, even if you were to work on all those areas, he still would not want you. And I realized I can't be anything more than a better woman.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
That's all I can be. And he still won't want me.
How does the church feel about divorce in a situation like this?
Well, honestly, the church doesn't talk about it.
Uh-huh.
At least the ones I've been in. Talk about it.
How about in your church? Is there anything about your divorce?
Well, back when I was younger, divorce was considered a sin.
Uh-huh.
But I guess really people are divorcing now till it's not harped on like it was before. So people who feel divorced can still feel accepted in church. But when they talk about, I remember I went to a divorce support group, and I told my story to the women there. And one woman said to me, your story isn't unique. My husband cheated on me. You're not unique. So he was gay. Mine wasn't. You're not unique. And that hurt me so bad I couldn't go back.
Wow. People just don't get it, right?
Yeah, she didn't get it. She said, no, I felt the same way you felt. And some people can tell you that, and you can hear the grace in it and the love in it. But her response, it was a snub. It was like, I felt that same way my husband cheated on me. You think it makes you, I would have felt better if he was gay and cheated on me. But when a man cheats on you with another woman, that's an extra slap in the face. And I just didn't see it that way. I didn't.
Well, I think that we can look at it like a double slap in the face, right?
Yes, because he doesn't even want you.
I think people don't recognize the difference in the emotional impact these relationships have on women.
Yeah.
That they think, well, why can't you get over it? You know, everybody else moves on. What's taking you so long? Why are you taking it so personally? And some people even say, well, at least he didn't reject you for another woman. You know, you shouldn't be upset. They just don't get it, do they?
No, they don't.
And I don't think they ever will. I think you have to live this experience to really understand it.
Yeah.
That unless you go through this, you can't have that kind of empathy and understanding.
Exactly.
I mean, you can feel bad for someone, but then you start judging them. Well, you sure they didn't know he was gay before he got married? Or maybe he wasn't when he got married. Did she do something to bring that out in him? You know, people ask us these questions. I mean, we all feel, you know, that we're being, you know, accused in some way of contributing towards this problem. And so it's no wonder that people are afraid to even say anything. You know, we're living in their closets.
So,
I don't think other divorced women, you know, if another woman's husband cheats and she says, well, my husband cheated on me, everybody's really sympathetic. But when you say, my husband cheated on me with a man and he's gay, they're not quite as sympathetic. They're thinking, well, there wasn't something that you did that brought this on. How come he must have been normal when he married you or not gay when he married you? You had children with him. You know, you were a happy family. What changed that? What did you do to change it? I mean, that's where it looks like.
Maybe if you had been more woman. Maybe if you had been sexier. Maybe if you had been more adventurous. Maybe if you had been more open. Maybe if you weren't a little prude. Maybe if you did get a little freaky. But you know, but the thing about it, you can tell, people can tell you that. But if a person does not like your plumbing, I don't care if you put on leather, stirrups, I don't care if you put on a cat suit. If they don't like your plumbing, they're not going to be turned on by it.
Exactly. They're just, no matter what you do, it's not going to happen. And, you know, I tell women, you have to look at it this way. We all have girlfriends that we love, and they're our best friends, and they keep our secrets, and we hang out with them. And no matter how much we love them, it would probably, in 99% of the cases, be repulsive for you to think about making love to that woman. You know, there's a difference between loving someone and making love to someone.
It's
and
true.
The same thing with these men. You know, they love us the best that they can, but they, when they make love to us, they feel that same sense of repulsion that we would feel with a woman because they're gay.
And it's
true, they just can't love us in that way.
But the idea of being sexual with them, oh, God, no. It's like that doesn't even cross my mind. It's so foreign.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care how much we share or how much I hug them or I might kiss them on the cheek, a nuzzle, you know, nuzzle my face against theirs, but it never takes on a sexual connotation.
Uh-huh.
Never. I don't even think of it. I don't even. It's not even in my thoughts. It's not even in any part of me.
That's because it's not in your orientation.
Exactly.
Not how you're made up, and that's why I tell women, it's not your orientation, and being straight is not their orientation. They have no more choice in their orientation than you have. The only thing they do have a choice in is being honest about it.
Exactly.
You know, they do have that choice. I mean, and I tell men, listen, you made a mistake. You thought you could make it work. I understand. I really do. It's such a difficult thing being gay. And for those men who can perform heterosexual sex, even if it's not the best, even if it's not that often, but they can still perform it, they are truly hoping against hope that loving their wives enough will be enough to make them change that, even make it better. And so they do try the best they can, but once they see it's not happening, that's when they have to be honest about it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to be out on the streets cheating on you day and night and not telling you and making it like it's not happening.
Exactly.
I mean, how do you claim to love a woman and live with her and be married to her and yet have no regard for how this is going to affect her? Do you feel like she's not going to know that you're sexually rejecting her because you want to be with a man? I mean, I don't understand these guys' thinkings a lot of times. Do you, Suzette?
Yeah. Very true, because she's going to feel it. She may not know exactly what's going on, but she knows something's not right.
Exactly.
And she may start to lie to herself because, you know, because she doesn't know exactly what's going on, but a woman can tell when her man is not all there. She can tell. After a while, she can tell. Something's not right. Something's not adding up. And it's more torture and it's more dishonoring to her to keep her in the dark about it or to make her think that it's something that she did. I burned the cornbread. I spend too much time with the children. I'm always running home to my mom. You know, they give all these different reasons. You work too much. You know, my ex might even say it was because of the way my body smelled. I mean, they'll say it's some of the only things.
They know how to attack you where you're most vulnerable.
Yes.
See, that's the part I don't like.
No,
you know,
I don't like it. It's very
they take away from you. You know, they just don't understand. It's like saying to them, how would they like it if they would say, you know, you're horrible in bed. You know, your penis is disgusting. It's all misformed. It's this, it's that. I mean, how would they feel about that?
They would feel awful.
Exactly my point. So
and I've been loving people.
We would never do that to them, even if it's true.
Yeah, when you love somebody, and then you might not even have to be in love. When you love somebody and you respect somebody, you do not want to willingly cause them pain. After a while, you can't keep doing it. Not if you really, really care for them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Well, that's why I say it's really sad to me to see how men can get away with this and women are so beaten down by the whole situation that they're really, you know, afraid to say anything or do anything. And they just stay and they linger longer and longer and longer. And, you know, they waste their lives. I mean, I think they totally waste their lives by doing this.
Yeah.
You know, they give away so much or they give up so much.
So much.
And, don't you agree?
Oh, my God, so much. But I am a witness, Bonnie. You can get it back. You can
and
be
that's what, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. You know, I know the feeling. I know how it feels to be filled with so much loathing. Especially for all that you put up with. It's like when you finally come to a point where you realize you can't take anymore, you think about all that you put up with, all that he said, all the shocks and all the hurts that you absorbed, all the verbal abuse and sexual abuse that was a kick in the gut that got absorbed inside of you. And it can cause you to just feel like, oh, my God, how could he, and then how could I? What does that say about me? So much. I went through so much. I let him say this. I let him do this. I begged him to touch me. I begged him to love me. I was reduced to almost animalistic. So many just dishonoring things we women do just to get that man to love us. And you can end up with such loathing. You loathe him, and then you loathe you. But at some point, and a lot of it is opening yourself up to another way. And part of it is listening to this show.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is daring to educate yourself. I think that was a key for me. a pivotal point for me was daring to educate myself. Even despite my feeling like, oh, my God, it's one thing to go through it one time, but it's another thing to go back. It's like, oh, my God. And that was so hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
Back, my God. Didn't you, I mean, what would make you go back? And so it made it even worse for me, even worse. But there was this something inside of me that wanted the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted truth. And the only way, I didn't really know it was going to help heal my heart, but I needed to know the truth. And so I started reading books, and I started searching, Googling, and going on websites. And for people who are listening, if you are doing that, that's a step in the right direction. If you're listening to this show, it's a step in the right direction. I don't care whether you are taking antidepressants. I don't care what you're doing in the dark. That desire to know truth, I think it's a human thing. It's a survival thing. That if I got to make some sense out of this.
Well, I think you go one way or the other. You become a seeker of truth like you did, or you become that ostrich and put your head in the ground pretending that it's not happening.
Yeah. But you know what I find?
I mean, I think you can only keep your head down for so long, and then eventually you're going to come up and surface and say, I just can't keep doing this anymore.
Exactly. This is what I tell people. Regardless of what you try to cover up, after a while your foot's going to slip from underneath it. Or your arm is going to slip. In some way or another, I don't care what you try to hide. Somehow or another, something gets exposed where you can't hide from it. So my thing is, if you're going to feel pain anyway, I'd rather it be the pain, growing pains, the pain of change, the pain, a positive pain, than that same self-loathing, hurtful pain. If I'm going to be locked up with something and I'm going to feel pain, I'd rather for it be growing pain. If I'm going to feel it anyway.
And you can't get those growing pains unless you face the truth, right?
Exactly, because at least with growing pains, one day you're not going to hurt no more. But if you hide, you are locking yourself in that closet. Because it's just geography. If you get a divorce, it don't matter if you're still in the closet. It's just geography.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to get out of the closet is to get out of the closet. That's the only way. Tell the truth.
And that really does set you free, and I hate to use a cliche, but as soon as you can say it, starting with yourself, that I'm not going to stay in this closet anymore, I've done nothing wrong. If there's any shame to have, it's not my shame, correct?
Not my shame. That's right. It's not my shame.
Right. It's not my shame to bear. It's not my, secret to keep. You know, your husband wants to keep the secret. In the meantime, he's not keeping a secret. He's leading a gay life. So obviously he's not keeping it secret because the men that he's with, they know the truth.
They know the truth.
And I tell women, you can't just sit there and say, oh, well, my husband told me I can't tell anyone. Okay, well, so what? I mean, it's not your secret. Go tell your family, tell your friends. I'm not saying post it from the rooftop, but you shouldn't have to be so isolated that you can't talk to your family about it or you can't talk to your friends about it. How did your family accept it when you told them?
Well,
do they believe you?
I think they believed me.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I don't think my mom really had a concept of what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she had a concept of it. I think my family embraced me and loved me because it hurt me, and they didn't want me to be hurt. But I don't think they had a concept of what that did. The depth of my pain, I don't think they could embrace it because I don't think they could conceive it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they could conceive it. And so even though they tried, they were not my greatest source of comfort.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot. You know, I was really lucky. I had a mother who was so supportive to me and who encouraged me so totally to get out of that marriage. But yet my grandmother, who, you know, was an older generation, who loved me to death and who only wanted me to be happy also, but she just couldn't grasp the whole concept. I think sometimes people have such a hard time grasping it, like it doesn't make sense. How could he marry you if he's gay? I mean, you have children with him. How could he be gay? How could
he
have sex? He's gay.
And that's why I don't. That's why I said I don't think they could really embrace it, because I told them that he was gay when we divorced the first time. And when I said I was getting ready to marry him again, the only person that threw a hissy fit was my younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
She threw a hissy fit.
But I bet your parents were happy, right?
Yeah, they were like, oh, good, the marriage has been restored. Girl, you know, you and God, y'all worked through it. Y'all,
right.
It was almost like a thing where, oh, good, the marriage has been restored. The family has been restored. And you know what? You know, y'all will be able to make it. My dad told me, I said, Dad, I think we're going to make it this time. He said, sure you are. He said, I'm just as sure this as them two shoes underneath that chair. He said he had a good thing, and he gave it up.
Mm-hmm.
No concept of the baby, you thought he was gay. Being gay. That never was the conversation. The only person that brokered that conversation with me was my sister. But in her brokering it, and I can't blame her, she was mad at me, though. It wasn't in the sense of, first it was like, she said, I mean, how do you know that he's not? How do you know? Then she got mad at me and turned on me. Almost like she was blaming me.
In any way that she blamed you?
I think she blamed me.
Mm-hmm.
I think she did. It's like after all that you went through, you going to go back to him again? She was mad at me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess she loved you a lot and she didn't want to see you suffer.
Yeah, she did.
Right?
She did.
Yeah, you see your sister. I always tell women when they say to me, I don't know what to do and I don't know if I should stay and how can I justify that I go, I say to them, look at your precious little daughters that you have or your sisters. If they came to you and they told you they're marrying a man just like their dad, would you be happy for them?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had one woman ever say yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the proof in the pudding. If it's not good enough for your daughter or your sister or your mother or someone you love, why is it good enough for you?
Yeah.
You know, children, you know, they look at you as a role model. And I was talking to my sisters today about this. You know, it's what I call the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome. Whatever you do, your children are bound to repeat whatever it is. If you come from dysfunction, if you come from a broken home, they're going to find themselves in the same situation because they only know dysfunction. They've never been in a functional situation.
Very
they
true.
Wouldn't even know it if it hit them in the face. You know, chaos is what they've grown up with, and that's what they're going to be drawn to. And that's why you have to be a role model to your children, as hard as it is. You have to give them the message, no, it's not okay to stay in a disruptive marriage or a toxic situation. You need to get yourself out, no matter how hard the struggle is. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. I would wholeheartedly agree. wholeheartedly.
And that's why I tell women, you know, you take a marriage vow, and that if you took the vow, you know, you promise to, you know, to be there in sickness and health, and, you know, this, you know, so da-da-da, whatever you're there for. It doesn't say for gay or for straight. I mean, that doesn't come as part of your marriage vows. You know, they leave that little part out, assuming that it's not going to have to be there. But women should never have to feel that they're doing something wrong because they don't want to live this way. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Very true, because one thing I tell people, a marriage involves two people. You can't be married by yourself. So you are not, if this person breaks the covenant, because people say, oh, I love them unconditionally. But nobody gets married without conditions, else there would be no vows.
Exactly.
There is a condition to marriage. You make promises to each other. And if that person breaks their promise or breaks the condition or does that, then you didn't end the marriage. They did.
Exactly. That's how I feel, too. And, in fact, you know, I'm starting a campaign this year. You know, it'll start for, you know, a few months. But I'm trying to get a movement going. I rented a website domain name. I'm going to have a design called Your Fault Divorce. You know, what kills me is that, first of all, women should take no responsibility for any problems in these marriages. And when I have women come to me and they say to me, well, you know, I did things wrong, too. Okay, yeah, you did. So what? You did them in response to an artificial situation that you had no knowledge of. You know, if you're feeling frustrated or angry, it's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because there's something wrong with your marriage. So naturally, you're responding in a way that's not the way you would normally respond to things. But what really kills me, because I have a good buddy, Wanda, who's going into court tomorrow, and she has to battle for alimony, that somebody's going to take money from her. He married under false pretenses. The marriage, of course, didn't work out, and now he wants alimony. I mean, she's paid thousands of dollars in legal expenses, as most of our women do. I don't feel that it's a woman's responsibility. I'm saying if men made a mistake, they got married, they hope for the best, that's fine. But when it doesn't work out because they're gay, then it's not that it's nobody's fault. There is fault here, and it's not blame, but there is fault. And women shouldn't have to pay for a divorce. I don't believe women should have to pay any legal charges. Would you say that's reasonable?
Because it's an insult to injury.
Right. It's not bad enough you have a gay husband. Now you have to pay for the divorce?
Yes, it's an insult to injury. And
it's making women stupid. Now you're going to be penalized the second time.
Yeah, it's like being violated again.
Right. So don't you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea.
I mean, not just for women with gay husbands, but for women who are married to any kind of predators. You know, whoever it is that misled a woman into a marriage, and now the marriage needs to end, it shouldn't be her responsibility to pay for it.
No,
he should pay for it.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. I totally agree.
Right. It's not your fault. It's his fault. So that's going to be my new campaign. I hope you'll support me with it in your work.
You know I'll support you.
I do. I know I can count on you, Suzette. But Suzette, let's talk about how they can find you, you know, if they need coaching. And as soon as my website's updated in the next week or two, you'll see Suzette's website up there. And you really do specialize with minority women who are going through this because, you know, you can make that extra special connection. And especially women who have, you know, gone through the whole church thing and, you know, the whole religion thing. So I'm so glad you're, you know, going to be one of our resources. And also you do coaching to help women get through this and see themselves differently, which is so important. And women will really find your help so supportive and changing. And like you say, treat yourself first. I mean, you're willing to throw away money on everything. Treat yourself to some coaching or therapy, or whatever you need to move ahead, but don't look for excuses why it's too expensive when if you stay in for a night from dinner and going out to a fancy dinner, you'll have the money. So there really are no excuses if you really want to recover. So, Suzette, what's the best website for people to find you on your – I know you have a new one. Is it up and running well?
I think it is, and I'll give them both of them because a lot of people will remember a person's name.
Right, and if you don't, all you have to do is email me at bondk@AOL.com. And I will email you Suzette's websites. But also, after, you know, the next week or two, just look on my side for resources, and you'll see Suzette up there. And when you click in, you'll see her website. So, okay,
and
give them the way now to find you.
It's www.SuzetteRHinton.com. And that R is the middle initial. Suzette, the letter R, Hinton.
And do you have your other stuff yet?
Yes, I do. I checked it, Bonnie. I checked it. It's good now.
Okay, what is
my other one is what my coaching inspired, and that was purposeful connection. I think whatever connections you make should be purposeful. And so that's my coaching website. It's www.purposeful-connections.com. And they have to make sure they put that hyphen in there, because then it'll take them to somebody else's site that I don't even know who they are.
Yep, now it's coming up good. Although I see it, am I living my best life? This content cannot be displayed in a frame. Let me try to open it in a new window. Yeah, see, we'll have to talk about that. Still a little glitchy. When I try to get into it, it's not letting me. But
okay.
In the middle, am I living the best of my life? So it's a work in process and progress, and it won't be long till it's all sorted out. But in the meantime, if you need Suzette's website, you can try purposefulconnections.com or SuzetteRHinton.com or just send me a note at bondk.com. And I'll send you the link to the site. So,
one of the things I've discovered is that with Internet Explorer, sometimes it'll say at the bottom, do you want to display all this content? And if you say yes, it'll bring everything up. But I'll have to check on some of those other glitches and de-glitch them.
And you will soon, I'm sure. And once again, do you do coaching by phone, by Skype, by in person?
I mean, whatever way. It can be on a park bench. It can be on a telephone. It can be via Skype. It can be chatting on Yahoo, chatting on Facebook. You know, whatever medium is needed.
Right. So whatever you need, you can find this wonderful, beautiful, inspirational, talented woman who I'm so proud to know.
Oh, I feel
that you
the
always
same.
Really inspire me. I really appreciate you being with me. And I hope that you'll come back in a few months and inspire us once again, because people have to need to keep hearing your message.
Oh, I would love it. I'd be honored to do that, Bonnie, and I mean that.
Well, I mean it too. And it's just been a wonderful show, and I hope for all of those of you who listen, if you learn nothing else, the lesson for tonight is learn to love yourself, take a break after you have a disaster and start to rebuild yourself, realize that life can start over again once you're whole again, because if you try to make it start happening before that, it's just going to break again. And I look for inspirational people like Suzette who will show you the way and help you lead your way there. So I want to say again, Suzette, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to having you back soon. And please give a big hug to your wonderful man. Tell him it's from me.
I will. I'll give him a hug and a big juicy kiss.
Yeah, and you can do more too. The thing is that you don't have to be jealous. You can explain to Mom like your old aunt. How's that? It's going to be my birthday Wednesday. I'm really getting old. I'll be 61 on Wednesday.
No, Bonnie.
I know. It's so unbelievable, right? That I could live till 61, but I did. Every day is a new challenge. But anyway, everybody, we're not going to be here next Sunday night because we have our healing weekend. But I'll be back with you following Sunday night on October 7th. All right, Suzette, let me give you a big kiss. Mwah. And I'll talk to you soon, and good night to all our listeners. We love you. Bye-bye.
I love you. Bye-bye.